I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Mark Pendergrass joins me now, the critically acclaimed best-selling author, has written an engaging new book, Beyond Fair Trade, How One Small Coffee Company Helped Transform a Hillside Village in Thailand. John Darch, an entrepreneur based out of Vancouver, meets an enterprising man named Wechup Pramyong in Thailand. This is nearly 10 years ago, and for a number of years before that, Pramyong has sought to cultivate and market coffee beans from Thailand abroad. The two men strike a partnership that goes beyond, as the title suggests, beyond fair trade, where the Akka people have a partnership with the Doi Chang Coffee Company. The beans are now available around the world. The story of how this venture came about, as well as the people involved, is interesting. I'll get Mr. Pendergrass to tell us about his own travels in chronicling this story. He is an independent scholar and the author of several books, including Uncommon Grounds, The History of Coffee and How It Transformed Our World, and For God, Country, and Coca-Cola, which was a New York Times notable book of the year. This new book is published by Greystone. The website for more is at markpendergrass.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program from Colchester, Vermont, Mark Pendergrass. Mr. Pendergrass, good morning.
Hey, Joe. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So I understand that you were in Vancouver last week to launch the book. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
How, I guess their operation is there on Powell Street here in Vancouver. And in terms of the business itself, that's been growing, hasn't it?
Yes. It only started in 2006, so it's quite remarkable, actually, that it hasn't gone bankrupt, because it's a very competitive specialty coffee market in Vancouver, in Western Canada in general. But they've done a remarkable job, really, of getting their story out, and the fact that it's quite good coffee.
It is. You're an expert at coffee. As I told you before we started, I don't drink this stuff. It is quite good from Thailand, is it?
Well, it's good from the village of Doi Chang, at any rate.
Mm-hmm.
There are two different types of coffee. There's Arabica,
uh-huh.
which is the better kind, and Robusta, which is the not-so-good kind, which grows at lower elevations. And so a great deal of Robusta is grown in Thailand, but now it's becoming recognized that you can grow quite good Arabica high up in the mountains, which is where this particular coffee is grown. This village is near Chiang Rai. If any of your listeners have gone to Thailand, they'll know where that is.
And so that's quite high up in the mountains, is it?
Yes, it's between 3,000 and 4,000 feet up.
Yeah. When did that start in terms of the cultivation and the harvesting of coffee from that village of Doi Chang?
Well, let's go back in time for a minute,
and
let me just tell you, if I may, a little bit of the background of the Akka people. It's one of the six main hill tribes that arrived in Thailand, really, after World War II, primarily. They started, you know, hundreds of years ago in China. They're a peaceable, egalitarian type people who would rather run than fight. So they basically left China, then finally left Burma, and ended up, this particular group, coming to this remote village of Doi Chang, which means Elephant Mountain, around 1980. At that time, there was not enough room for them to do their traditional rice cultivation or rotating agriculture. The only thing they could grow to make a living was opium poppies. And that was disastrous in a number of ways, because a number of them became addicted. But also, they didn't make very much money from it. Finally, the military came and destroyed all the poppy plants in 1985. And so they were left with, what do we do now?
Mm-hmm.
The German NGO teamed up with the Thais to try to help them. And although it was well-intentioned, they introduced a number of alternative crops. Only tomatoes and cabbage succeeded. They did try to introduce coffee,
uh-huh.
but it didn't do very well. And there was no ready market for it either. But tomatoes they did very well with, except that they had to buy pesticides. No one taught them to apply them properly, and it made them ill. In fact, it killed some people. And then the price of tomatoes collapsed because too many people started growing it. So by the 1990s, they were in terrible, terrible shape, and that's when, in 2001, Adele, who is was a young headman of the village, an Aka, mm-hmm. came down the hill to see Uncle Weecha because he was sort of a Thai hippie, an aging hippie, who was also a brilliant entrepreneur. And he had gone through the mountains for years buying what he called antiques and reselling them in Bangkok, but he also became very concerned about the plight of the hill tribes and the fact that many of their young women were forced into prostitution in the lowlands because no one could make a living, things like that, mm-hmm. And would bring AIDS back to the villages. So when Adele came to see Weecha, he said, well, okay, I'll come up the mountain and see, maybe there's something we can do. And he saw some coffee growing because not all of it had been chopped down.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Adele's father, Pico, who was more elderly, had continued to try to grow coffee and sell it for very little money. When Weecha saw the coffee, he said, you know, I don't know anything about coffee, but it's become quite popular now in Bangkok, I know, because Starbucks has begun there.
Mm.
Let me see if this is any good. So he took some of the beans down. He had them roasted, and he didn't know, but the roaster said, these are really good. So then he sought expertise, and he was the kind of person that once he set his mind to something, he would find out everything about it. And it's really his doing that they began to cultivate coffee. They found a resistant variety that would withstand a disease called coffee leaf rust.
Mm.
And they brought their own roasting machine up the mountain, which was quite remarkable. It was this ancient German machine that they brought up in 16 truckloads up this horrible muddy dirt road, put it together, and they fired it up, and it immediately set all the beans on fire and blew out the electricity in the village. But they eventually figured it all out. And it was at that point, as you described, that they were beginning to do okay with it. They had started a little coffee house down mm-hmm. in Chiang Rai. They had even started one in Bangkok by the time this meeting happened in 2006, 5 years after they really started, with a wealthy Canadian named John Darch.
So during all this time, Darch had been making his money in Vancouver, I guess. Well, he'd come from England, I guess, and then eventually came here to this part of the world in the 70s. He was a banker, and then he'd invested in mining. Is that right?
That's right. And it's interesting. So I have two different chapters, one on this fellow Weecha and his background, mm-hmm. which was also quite varied. He was like a busker on the streets of Europe for quite some time, so I found out he knew all these old folk songs that I used to sing with him. Darch came from a totally different background, but they were in some ways quite similar. They liked to do a lot of different things. Darch had come as a banker to Vancouver and was fascinated with all of the mining activity and penny stocks, and he ended up going up to the Yukon and having all kinds of adventures, and then quitting the bank with a partner and investing in gold and silver and diamonds and tin all over the world, and potash in Thailand, which is what brought him to Thailand. So a friend of his in Thailand suggested that he meet with Weecha, and he did not think anything would come of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when he met him, he was very impressed because, you know, here was this, he called him a cross between a Thai hippie and a monk, sitting cross-legged on a cushion, this little guy, and said, he didn't ask me for money. He just told him about the Aka and how much they needed help. And they weren't asking for charity, but so Darch ended up starting this coffee company just to roast beans from this one village.
Mm-hmm.
and he didn't know anything about what he was getting into. He knew a lot about mining, and he regarded it as sort of venture capital that he would begin this firm.
And so,
which he did.
So you've gotten to know Darch over the years, and unfortunately, Weecha is no longer with us. He died a couple of years ago. Is that right?
He died in 2014 in January. Mm-hmm. So nearly 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible shock to me. I mean, he smoked too much, but he seemed immortal. He seemed, unstoppable. He had a huge amount of energy, was always spinning off ideas. He just seemed like he was so full of life. But he died of a massive heart attack in January of 2014, and it was a real question as to whether the Aka would continue on their own, because he was so much a big part of this, but they have. They've been able to do quite well on their own.
So have you talked to John Darch about just what drew him, or I guess, to Weecha, and say how they managed to strike this partnership that's worked well for both of them now?
I forgot to say that what Darch did that's really quite remarkable is he gave half of the company, the Vancouver Roasting Company, to the Aka in this village. So they own half of it. And what led him to do that really was he attributes it to his mother in a lot of ways. His mother taught him that, you know, he grew up not wealthy, but, you know, not lacking for anything. And his mother said, you know, you're no better than those other children who live in the bad part of town. It's just an accident of birth. And she had this saying that I quoted at the beginning of the book that Darch passed on to me. I shall pass through this world but once. Any good, therefore, that I can do, or any kindness that I can show to any human being, let me do it now. Let me not defer or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. And so I think in large measure, you know, that's how he has lived his life. Now, certainly mining is not always kind to the environment. And I asked him about that. I said, isn't it kind of ironic that you're selling fair trade organic coffee beans when potash, which he actually, no one has actually gotten to mine it yet, but if they do, it's part of, you know, chemical fertilizer.
Yeah.
He said, no, it doesn't bother me at all. There are places where you need chemical fertilizer. It's just that not this place.
Yeah. And you
asked Weecha about that, too. Yeah. And he said, well, you know, we're not using any chemical fertilizer. I don't believe in it. But Kunjan is a good man. So that's basically all he said.
Yeah, and Kun, I guess, Kun is a sign of respect, I guess, and it's a sort of like Mr., I suppose?
It's kind of like Mr., but with a lot more respect implied in time, that's right.
Yeah. So this partnership between the Aka and John Darch and the folks here in Vancouver, that's resulted in a number of spin-offs. I mean, this Civet coffee, I guess the coffee beans that are, would you explain that? I mean, civets are cats, sort of wild cats, and they ingest the beans, and then it goes through them, and then they harvest it that way. Is that how it works?
Yes, they're not actually cats. They're called civet cats, but they're more related to, I think, mongoose. But they they're nocturnal animals who live wild throughout Indonesia and Asia, and they have a particular fondness for very ripe coffee cherries. So in the season, they will go and pick their own coffee during the night, eat it, and when they excrete it, it has been processed. In other words, there is a process that you must go through with coffee to get the outside skin off and then to ferment off or some other way remove the pulp from the seed. And when it comes through their guts, it adds a certain quality to the beans, which a lot of people really like. And they're very rare, so they're quite expensive. So you know, they found these naturally on the hillsides in Thailand, and they sell it as wild civet cat coffee. It's also called Kopi Luwak in Indonesia. But it became quite controversial because the BBC did an expose showing that many people in Indonesia particularly are capturing civet cats, keeping them in cages, and force-feeding coffee to them. So it's not wild. So I documented that the Doi Chang variety is indeed wild by climbing up into the mountains and actually seeing them harvesting it. And if you want a little amusement, you can go to YouTube and put in civet coffee and Pendergrast, and you'll see a little video I made of myself trekking up the hillside.
And you've tried the coffee? I mean, it just seems odd for a lot of people who, like myself, who don't drink coffee. But I mean, it tastes quite good, does it?
Well, you know, I think it tastes okay. I wouldn't pay $500 a pound for it. I think it's sort of a novelty item. But yes, it does add a distinct quality to the taste. I would say it's a gutsy quality, shall we say.
And there are other ventures as well that the ACA have I guess, involved themselves with, spin-offs like soap and honey, is that right?
That's right. They make a coffee soap, which is quite a good sort of, it's kind of like lava soap. It's got little bits of espresso ground up in it. The honey is made from bees pollinating the very brief coffee blossoming season. And it's really quite delicate and wonderful, I think. But I don't think that's imported into Canada, so I don't think any of your listeners are going to be able to try any of that out.
Yeah.
They're stuck with the coffee.
Yeah. So without these ventures, I guess the ACA people would have found it difficult to survive.
Yes, they were finding it difficult to survive. Oh, they also grow macadamia nuts. And I should mention, it's not just the ACA. There's another tribe there called the Lisu, and there are some Chinese who live there as well. The Lisu were the majority when the ACA moved there, but most of them moved away in despair because they couldn't make a living. And the ACA had no other place to go and just stayed.
So this coffee venture, I mean, does this ensure their survival?
Well, it certainly does right now. You know, something could always go wrong, but they start. It's not only ensured their survival; it's also really helped the environment there. It was the mountain was pretty much denuded of trees. Now they've planted, you know, hundreds of thousands of coffee trees, plus thousands of shade trees to go above the coffee. And so it's become much more biodiverse. A lot of the native animals and birds and reptiles have come back. And so have many of the ACA who couldn't make a living have come back, and you know, their children are staying there now. I went to one of their public school classes, and I asked the children to raise their hand if any of their parents made money from coffee, and they all raised their hand.
Yeah, and so the quality of life has improved there. That muddy road is now paved, right?
That's right. They have electricity. They have a very good and well-stocked medical clinic. Their infant mortality has gone down. They're doing much better. On the other hand, their culture is being eroded because of all this contact with the outside world, and they have computers and iPads. So that was going to happen anyway, but it's happened faster. So it's not all positive. And, you know, when it's kind of like a town that has seen very, very rapid wealth accumulation in a very short period of time, and that brings with it a variety of problems. There's drug problems and gambling, but the younger generation is going to grow up, I think, much, much better off in general.
So this coffee, the Deutschland coffee, that's available widely, and you do a wonderful job in the book chronicling the process of getting it into certain stores. There was a debacle with Whole Foods. It's available now at Costco. In terms of
by the way, yeah. I found out after I wrote the book, they're back in they're now in Whole Foods again in the Vancouver area.
I see. Okay, yeah, and so yeah. it's an interesting insight into how you market a product, and of course the margins are quite small because you have to import the beans, and at one point they were roasting them in Calgary and then bringing them back here. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And now they're roasted in Richmond, not too far from Vancouver.
Yeah.
By Canterbury Coffee, which is a toll roaster. It roasts beans for other companies.
Yeah.
It is an interesting story. I'm glad you found that part interesting. I'm more fascinated by the whole adventure in Thailand, which most people won't know about.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. It's like a little business story of how. How you get a business started and try to keep it going. The ironic thing is that it's doing far better in Asia than it is in Vancouver, in large measure because the Canadians gave it international recognition and got them started. But now they have like over 500 coffee houses in Thailand. They're opening them in Korea. They're quite well known. They're sort of like the Starbucks of Thailand.
So there is a lesson here from what the Darches have done in terms of going about a venture like this. I mean, they certainly don't view it as charity. It is to make money for themselves and for the Akka people, right?
That's true. Although they have yet to turn a reasonable profit. The Akka own half the company, but it's not making much of a profit yet.
Yeah.
But yes, that's right. They're intending it as a new model of capitalism. And to the degree that they're, you know, including the people who make the product, I think it's a good and important new model. You know, more and more people are interested in not only the quality of a product, but how are the people treated who grow it, what impact does it have on the environment, things like that. And so people can feel quite good about that in this case.
My parents are Filipino, so I read with interest in the book that John had attempted a venture in the Philippines, and that was rebuffed by the people there.
That's right. It was sort of ironic because he was going to do the same sort of thing for Hill Tribes. They were actually going to help them, but they didn't trust the miners. I think they might have trusted coffee people more than miners.
Yeah. So in the book, you spend a lot of time in Thailand, and it's a wonderful adventure, as you've alluded to already. Did you know you had a book already, and that's why you made the trip, or did you have to make the trip to sort of convince yourself to write a book on all of this?
Well, I went initially for a week, sort of as an exploratory thing, to see whether I would write a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, yeah, I was, you know, I met Weecha, and I saw what was going on up on that mountainside, and I thought, wow, this is really quite something. So, yeah, I think it's a book. So then I came back twice more for longer periods of time.
And getting to know the Akka people, that must have been a great experience. I mean, they are a peaceable people, aren't they?
They are, but they're also very, very hardworking, and, you know, in a way, I'm glad I wrote this book to document their own creation myths and their traditional way of life, because, as I said, it's quickly disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping the book will get translated into Thai, and maybe, well, it's not going to be translated into Akka, because there's no written language. They don't have a written language, except that a missionary made up one, but they don't want anything to do with missionaries.
They take a dim view of all that, don't they?
They do,
yeah.
The ones that I met.
Yeah. So for you, in your travels there, you found it, obviously, it's stuff you'll never forget. I mean, the people are nice, and people like Weecha, who you got to hang out with a great deal, are unforgettable. Is this something that, that people can do? I know Linda Aylesworth over at Global went over there to
Global TV.
Yeah, she did. She did some pieces for the News Hour there, and that eventually became a documentary for the network. Can people go to that part of the world?
Oh yes, in fact, it's quite easy now that they paved the road. Go to Chiang Rai, R-A-I. There's also Chiang Mai, which is further south. It's only about an hour's drive from Chiang Rai, and it's becoming sort of a tourist destination. You can certainly go up there. Don't stop just at where they process the coffee. There's a little coffee house there. Go on down into the village and explore there, too, if you go.
Yeah, and the food's good?
Oh, food's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah, I enjoyed reading this book, Mark. What's next for you? Are you working on something now?
Well, I am working on a book. It's some ways quite different, some ways similar. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm writing a book about my hometown, but it's changed so much that I've been sort of like a stranger in a strange land there also. But that's what I'm working on right now.
So growing up in Atlanta, did that, say, fuel the interest in Coke?
Yes, that's right. I wrote it. That was my first book, was For God, Country, and Coca-Cola, which is now in its third edition.
Yeah. Mark, it's been such a pleasure talking today. I've enjoyed this book, and I hope it continues to do well. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Take care.
The website for more, markpendergrass.com. The book is called Beyond Fair Trade, How One Small Coffee Company Helped Transform a Hillside Village in Thailand. It's published by Greystone. Its author, Mark Pendergrass. Join me from Colchester, Vermont. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunta.